All right. Well, let's get going. How is everybody? All right. So last week, I just talked the whole time. Today, you are going to help me out a little bit more. So I'm going to have questions, and they are not just hypothetical questions. You're going to help me work through the sections of Scripture that we look at. Right, but last week, we just did an introduction to the series and an introduction to what creativity is. And amongst a lot of talking, I made the point that creativity has three parts. Slide. You have the idea, you have the process, and you have the result. And we went on to talk about the fact that creativity can look like a lot of different things, but at the core, it's simply an idea that becomes something through an act of effort. Now, today we're going to talk about the fact that creativity was created. That creativity isn't just something that erupts out of nowhere. It does not generate from nothing. Creativity is itself an act of creativity. And so to explore this, we are going to look at the beginning, right? Look at the origin of creativity, creation itself. Now, when Christians talk about creation, what do they usually talk about? That's a question. Whoa. Beginning of the world, something from nothing. 7 days, Genesis 1. Right, a lot of time the conversation turns into exactly how does this meld with science, right? And kind of you have the people going, all right, we need to figure out how we can make sense of this with what we're seeing scientifically. We have other people who are kind of draw these lines of like, if you don't believe in a 6-day, 24-hour creation, then you don't read the Bible literally and you are a heretic. Maybe you don't know those people. I've met a few. I was having a discussion with a friend one time in which he was picking apart the creation order presented in Scripture. So he was going through and going, this can't be like this because this needs the sun. And I don't know, again, if you've ever been in these conversations, I find myself in the middle of them. And so he's like, this can't possibly be an accurate description of how creation was done. And I just stopped him and went, fine. But what does it say? Right? That's always what I go back to is like, you can try to dismiss things and everything. You can come up with excuses as to why it doesn't say what other people are saying it says, but the Bible says something. What does it say? And why is God saying that to us? Right? How can we understand what God is saying to us in Genesis 1? How can we understand creation not through some lens that we've created, not through some things we picked up along the way, but simply to read the Bible and the creation narrative as he has laid it out. I've always loved how Dorothy Sayers put this, and before I read this quote, she uses the word El for God, E-L. There's a reason for that from the book that I'm not going to describe right now, but when it pops up, that's what she's talking about. She says, the only reason I can find for all the shouting about how God created is that it allows some people to stop thinking, to settle back into the safety net of their rut, to stop thinking about what it is really all about. What it's really all about is that creation is God's. It is El who has made us and not we ourselves. To argue about how God made us is to argue about non-essentials. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter a whit how God created. The important thing is that creation is God's and that we are part of it. And that being part of creation is for us to be co-creators with El in the continuing joy of new creation. That is a great calling. And when we argue about how God created us, we forget our vocation and the tempter rejoices. I'm all for scientific research, but when we argue about how, rather than if or why, we miss the point. In a world where fewer and fewer people believe in God at all, where life is for many an unimportant accident with no meaning, where we are born only to slip back into annihilation, we need to stop arguing and affirm the goodness of creation and the power of love which holds us all. Now, there is certainly a place to debate and discuss the how, right? To reduce the creation narrative down to a mere description of events misses the magnificence of what Genesis 1 is trying to reveal to us. And so approaching the creation, not to reduce it down to a mere description of events, not to make it something that we can rationalize and dismiss, right? Makes God's creative act something that can inspire us to imagine and ultimately to create. And so we're going to look at the 7 days of creation through the lens of creativity, to draw out what this story is trying to tell us about who we are as people created by the great Creator. So we're going to go Genesis 1. Oh, there's the other half of that quote. Thanks. All right. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. What do we see here? What do we learn about creation from this? God created. Yeah, this starts with this idea that the creation happens, but there is a before. The Creator existed before creation. Before this world, God was. And it's not just singular, the Trinity was. Right? We have the Spirit, we have God the Father. We see in John chapter 1 that Jesus was present at creation. The Word was there. Everything comes from the Word. So God in Trinity existed before the creation of the world. Back to our definition of creativity, we also see that there was an idea. Right? Before things started happening, there was an idea. There was a creative reason that God was doing this work. And we know it's not loneliness because God exists in perfect Trinity. It's not because God needed something because God is complete in himself. And so we see the Creator is acting on an idea. There's a creative reason behind why God is doing what he is doing. Now, at this point, we don't know what it is. But we know it exists. We know it's there. All right, we'll go to day one. Day one, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light, and God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. So what does God create on the first day? Light. What does light do? Reveals. Right? I always use the example of walking across the house with Legos all over the floor, right? The light is very helpful. It helps us to see what's in front of us. What is the contrast here with the light? Darkness, right? And what does God do between the light? He creates light, but what does he do here between light and darkness? Right, he separates it. So now we have this distinction between light and dark. Where there was only ever dark, now we have not only the ability to see, but we have it contrasted with the darkness. What does this teach us about God? What was that? He allows darkness, right? The darkness was there. He's making distinctions. Yeah. And specifically in relation to illuminating something, right? Something we can now see something we couldn't see before. So God started with this formless void, and now all of a sudden he brings in light so we can begin to see what is going on there. We can begin to see that there's something more, and there's distinction now between the light and the dark. So day one brings clarity. That's the first step of God's creative act here. Day two, God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. So why does God create the second day? Water? There's no land. And does he create the water? The water was actually there in Genesis verse 2, right? The Spirit was hovering over the waters. So what is God actually doing here? Making heaven. So what heaven is God is talking about? The atmosphere. Right, so the water is being separated into two portions. You have the water that is here, the water on the ground. You have the water now that makes up the heavens. Now, water in kind of ancient times represented chaos. And there's reasons for that. When you go out on a boat and people didn't return, they'd be like, that's chaotic. You can't see under the water. They didn't have sonar, so kind of they didn't really know what was down there. And on maps, they drew big dragons, and so people got scared. That's not true. But the water represented chaos, and so what we see God doing here is he's going into the midst of chaos, and he's creating order, right? All of a sudden, God is not afraid of the chaos, obviously, and speaking to the people that this is written to, what they see here is God making sense out of the chaos. God takes what is formless and chaotic and gives it place. And so what do we learn about God here? He's a God of order. Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's a process to it. There's also the fact that God is coming in here and he was working in the midst of what is terrifying to people, right? So it's showing God's power, which you go, of course he's the creator he has power over, but he's showing his power specifically over that which at that time the people see as uncontrollable. God is showing that he is in control of all things. And so here in day two, he gives us definition. Day three, God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. We'll get to the second half of that in a second. But in the first part here, what do we see? What does God create?
Land.
And again, specifically, the land was already there. What he did is he collected the waters over and revealed the land, right? Now think again about water being chaotic. What then does land represent?
The calm peace with not all shaky.
Where it's not all shaky. Yeah, no, it's firm, right? And the Bible talks about that all the time, right?
Water won't touch you unless it starts raining.
Right. It stays over there.
Yeah.
Right? In Psalm 40, we get a picture of that, right? This idea of the firm land. He drew me up from the pit of destruction out of the miry bog and set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. It's this idea that land is secure. Your feet are there, right? And so what God is doing here is he's creating a space for people to inhabit, for people to be, that is safe and away from the water, the chaos. Then says in the second half, God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, which according to its kind on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation and plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning the third day. And so what is God creating here? Vegetables.
Plants.
All plants, including the ones you can eat. Yeah. And what specifically is described here in this vegetables? You got me. Vegetation. Right? How is the vegetation described? Yeah. Yeah, God doesn't just go, there's your backdrop, live in it. It's this living, reproducing creation that we're in, right? It is a creating creation that God sets forth. There's order to it too, each according to its kind. We constantly get that, which is to say, these are going to grow a specific way. They're going to reproduce a specific way. All of these things have a way that they are designed to function. That points back to purpose. Right? There's a purpose for each of these things. They don't just do this because, well, that's what plants do. They do this because God created them to operate in this way. And so what does this tell us about God? Day three.
Provides.
Yep. Yeah. And that's what we're going to get into. You start to see that all of these things are designed with people in mind. People are meant to experience and interact with all of these aspects that God is creating. There's also tons of variety here, right? It's not just, you know, he created one plant, and from that, lots of other plants eventually were created. This idea of each according to its kind is so people reading it later are going, all of those different plants were created by God. That whole variety that we see out there, that all comes from God's creative action. And so day three here brings solidity and variety. All right, day four. God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. So what does God create on the fourth day?
The sun
and the moon and the stars. Right? Everything that's in the cosmos. Right? What specifically does it tell us that these things do? It doesn't say, it just says greater and lesser. It's good that you knew that was a sun and a moon. What else? Yeah. Yeah, you have all of the ways to measure time and so all of the order of how the stars and how the earth rotates and how far we are from the sun, all of these things go into how God set things in place. All of this is so that we can experience, again, and measure and study time, and again, there's no limit to the study here. And it just keeps going. We keep sending things into space to take the deepest pictures we can think of, and all of it shows us is that it keeps going. Right? We see this in Psalm 8, right? When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? What is that saying that this does to us? When you think about how huge the galaxies are, huh? Well, yeah, but for what reason? Right? I mean, this should overwhelm us. There's an aspect of order here. There's an aspect but a part of it is when you look at how huge everything is, it should actually humble us quite a bit, right? Who are we that you are mindful of us? There's so much else going on out there, and yet we have a God who cares about us. That should shock us. So day four brings us immensity. Day five, God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, and which the waters swarm, according to their kinds, every winged bird according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas and let the birds multiply on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. So what does God create in the fifth day?
Carnivores.
You get something to eat now. Yeah. We're not having that discussion tonight. Specifically, what kind of animals are created on day five? What? Yes, amphibious and aviary. We got the swarm. That's the sea swarming with living creatures and the birds that fly above. Now, what does it say specifically about these birds and these fish and amphibians? Yeah, again, we have this idea of their kinds, and so we have this idea of the variety and kind of the lots of different aspects. We have that idea, again, of purpose. And then there's this call here, and there's a similar call, be fruitful and multiply later, to human beings. But we see that with the plants, it doesn't say, hey, plants, be fruitful and multiply, because the plants don't have ears, except the corn. No? Sorry, that was terrible. I didn't even have that in my notes. Right, but we see this idea of a creation that continues to create, right? A creation that keeps becoming more, that goes on and develops. What does this teach us about God? What does day 5 teach us about God? What was that? Future? Yeah. Right, he's not just creating for this moment. The plan goes well beyond just that initial moment. You don't even have foxes and bears yet, right? No, but there starts to be this issue. We said before, some of these actually eat each other, right? And so you start to actually get this idea of not only purpose for the animals and different purposes for the animals, but kind of you be within the food chain, you get to begin to get a hierarchy. And we see that even more. So day 5 here, we begin with life, and then day 6... Right. Yeah. And we'll get into that a lot next week when we're talking about actually our responsibility, what God actually tasks human beings with. And that becomes a big part of that. Day 6, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So what does God make day 6? It's not a trick question. It's right there. Land animals, right? All the rest of the animals that we have. Yeah, no. Those don't come till after sin and the fall. But again, according to their kinds, so we see the variety that is there, but there's also this aspect, right, of kind of the animation of life, right? This idea of God giving life to things. It's there in day 5 as well. But we begin to see, even before human beings come on, this way that God gives, if anybody has a dog, you see, like, there's something there, right? I mean, they're not the most brilliant animals in the world, but it's there is something with animals where you see they are responding to, they are reacting. So there's a life here. Now it's different than the life that God creates next when he creates human beings. He creates this hierarchy that says human beings are responsible and have rule over all the other animals. And yet at the same time we see this aspect where God does not just basically make this flat world where everything is dead and we live in it. There's other living things that we interact with that have life, that have a certain amount. I mean, they're more similar to us than a tree is. And so they bring companionship and all these sorts of things. And so God is providing all of this variety for us in creation. And as I said before, we begin to see a hierarchy developing as well. Some animals are more powerful than others, and then ultimately God comes and he creates human beings and says, it's your responsibility to rule over all of these things. And we're going to talk about that a little more next week. Then we have day 7. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So what does God make on the seventh day?
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
He said on the seventh, it says on the seventh day God finished his work. Well, what did he finish on the seventh day?
It was, yes, it was finished, and then the seventh day.
Okay.
Yeah. That is worded, interestingly, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's actually a translation thing. The translations actually spell that out differently, and some of them try to clear up that because the original has kind of a weird way that that sentence is put together. But ultimately, it's to get to the point that on the seventh day, God rested. He didn't create anything. What does that tell us about God? Yeah, so that's not what it tells us. God does not need to rest.
I think he's leading by example.
Leading by example. And what is it? Yep. Yep. And that is a Sabbath discussion for a different time. But specifically, what is God resting on the seventh day tell us about his creation? And in a way, what he's doing is he's looking back over everything that he's done. He is in the same way that's ultimately what he calls us to in the Ten Commandments, is he tells the human beings who he calls to himself, you need to sit and remember what I have done. You need to actually take the time to actually enjoy. And what it shows us is that this world is not all about work. It's not all about doing. It's not all about earning. It's not all about some of the things we put it on. There is something more. And when we start talking about creativity, that's what we're talking about. Creativity isn't this thing that kind of is off there, right? Like once you get, the work is the important stuff, and then if you happen to have frivolous time, maybe we can work in some creativity. Creativity and kind of this, I mean, what we're talking about here is worship. And that aspect of worship and enjoying the creation, that's part of what God designed into creation. It's not just something, again, that's like, well, if you have it. No, it's part of who we are. It's part of what he modeled for us. And so what do we learn from the creation account as a whole? God creates in a way that helps us to understand him. God not only creates, but he separates. And we see him separating over and over again. What we see him doing is defining order, defining structure, showing us how these pieces all work together. We also see the world has a specific purpose. Now, here in Genesis 1, we don't know quite what that purpose is. It's still being unfolded for us, but we can see very clearly that God has a reason why he is doing all of these things. In our definition of creativity, then, of idea, process, and result, we see in Genesis 1:1 that God creates with a purpose, an idea. We start to see the process unfolding. God is starting to show us how he's going to do this through order and clarity and definition and solidity and variety. God is in his creation process unfolding for us a picture. Part of it is a picture of who he is so we can know him better. But it's also that we can get this foundation to understand who we are and how we're to operate and live in this world that he created. He shows us that he is creating and how he orders it so that we can start to understand our work of creativity. And so as creation, we do not design like God does. We do not design ex nihilo, out of nothing. God is the only one who is truly original in his creating. The best we can ever do is create from that which is already made. Which means we don't need to be striving to make something new. That's a big part of the art world. It's like, you got to be original. You got to make something that people have never made before. But the best that we can really do is be reflectors of our Creator. Use the things that he made for us and follow his order in a way that creates good, that creates things that are ordered and structured in the way that he created this world to be. Creativity is at its best when it is an accurate reflection of the only creative act that was ever original, God's act of creating the world. And I'm going to leave you with a quote by C.S. Lewis on this. He said, "Even in literature and art, no man who bothers about originality will ever be original. Whereas if you simply try to tell the truth without caring twopence how often it has been told before, you will 9 times out of 10 become original without ever having noticed it."